Welcome to The Primal Pioneer, a no-nonsense podcast teaching you how to become more informed and empowered with regard to your health so you can support your health with the least amount of medical intervention possible. I'm your host, Heather Shepherd, classical homeopath, author of The Sunlight Rx, and ancestral foods chef. For the past 12 years, I've been helping people overcome acute and chronic health disorders and brain injuries using a 100% natural approach. Enjoy this episode and subscribe to this podcast to stay informed about your health, your food choices, and the healing power of sunlight. Hi, everyone. Welcome back this week. Today I'm going to be talking about an important topic. I guess they're all important, huh? But this is a hot topic. It's been for many years. And that is blaming cows on global warming, one. And number two, I'm going to be talking about how to tell if the beef you buy, particularly the beef, but we could say, you know, chicken and other animals as well, the product of the animal protein you buy, how can you tell if it's really grass-fed? I'm going to get into that today as well. And I want to help you all get clear about this topic because there are some instances where cows can do, I shouldn't say cows, it's more like humans raising the cows in an absolutely unfit and inhumane way. This is what contributes to the increased carbon emissions, okay? However, when you raise cattle in particular, the way they're supposed to be raised, free roaming on pasture, pasture rotation practices, regenerative practices, well, actually, what has been shown and proven and just demonstrated, like if you just, you know, observe the situation and how the land improves and grows and flourishes after cattle have been on that land, that cattle actually reverse carbon emissions, okay? But of course, we're being told the other story. So I'm going to get into this. And if you're someone who's really concerned about global climate change and you've been avoiding beef because you think they're a big contributing problem to this issue, I hope that this episode will open your eyes to how cattle not only don't have to be an issue when it comes to carbon emissions, but how they can actually reduce carbon emissions. Now, let me just kind of digress here a little bit into this topic in case you're like, yeah, I heard about global warming, I heard about cows and how they contribute, but, you know, what are we really talking about here? So let me just, you know, digress a little bit. So when too much carbon is released into the atmosphere, it's said to contribute to the warming up of the planet, okay? There are a lot of things that contribute to this. The fingers, you know, mostly pointed to cows. It's never pointed to the satellites in the sky. It's never pointed to the excessive Wi-Fi distribution to, you know, most homes, especially in, you know, big cities and so forth. It's never pointed at the massive rollout of cell towers and upgrading of those cell towers. It's never blamed, the fingers never pointed at chemtrails. The finger is pointed at cows. Okay, this is an easy out. This is a really easy out. Okay, you know, so, you know, let me just give you an example. If you like lamb, do we ever hear about how sheep are contribute to the global, the heating up of the environment? And I shouldn't, you know, always, it's never the animal. It's never the animal that's the problem. It's the human who's raising the animals that's the problem. The way that they're raising these animals is the problem. It's not the animal. But I'm going to give you an example. Sheep raised in confinement and CAFO, which are contained animal feeding operations, are called CAFOs. Okay, sheep raised in this environment contribute to an even greater degree to carbon emission when compared to cattle raised in CAFOs. Okay, don't get me wrong. I am in no way supporting any CAFO environment or raising any animals in that environment. Not at all. Okay. But, we only hear about cows. We only hear about how they're the problem, right? Now, I want to make it very clear that there are other producers of carbon emissions outside of cattle. And it's only when we raise these animals in an unfit, inhumane, crowded environment on monocrop food feed that this becomes an issue. And the cows have nothing to do with it, nor do the sheep, nor do the pigs, nor do the chickens. Who has something to do with this? Well, of course, the government and the farmers who choose to raise their animals in this way. Okay, so monocrop farming contributes hugely, huge, 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 hugely to carbon emissions as well. But the finger is never pointed at them either, right? You don't see them pointing fingers at monocropping. You don't see the government or people, making these documentaries on global climate change, how monocrops are an issue, and how the humans raising animals in these environments are the issues. You don't hear anybody talking about how how cell phones contribute to this issue. No, these aren't talked about. For some reason, cows are getting hit the hardest. Now, a factor behind this is quite likely that the movement towards a meat-free world, to be meat to be substituted with bugs and insects and soy, and the agenda being pushed here, and the vegan agenda that was pushed the years before that, for years and years, you get again, yet again, these models are designed to keep us sick, to keep us compliant, to keep us tethered to a broken medical and financial system, and to divert our attention away from the real issue. I'm gonna do an aside here because I am not I'm not somebody who's really out in the mainstream world. But I will say that every year, my wife's family is very much into watching the Academy Awards. I hate Hollywood, okay? But to preserve my marriage, to do something, you have to do things outside your comfort zone, right? So every year, here we are, we're watching this thing. Of course, I've got my red blue blockers on. Of course, we're doing it in all the ways that are supportive of the circadian biology. It's on Ethernet, et cetera. We find ways to make it work. You want to watch the Academy Awards? Great. We're going to do it on Ethernet. I'm going to wear my red blue blockers, ex for example. We just did an episode together, my wife and I, on how to stay married and live a quantum lifestyle. If you haven't listened or watched that episode on YouTube and you have this struggle, if this is a sore place, if this is a wound in your relationship, I cannot encourage you enough to go and listen to that episode. But what I want to say here is, if any of you out there gives two shits about the Academy Awards, or maybe it's your family tradition too, and there you are and you've showed up and you're watching this thing, right? Or maybe you like it, maybe you enjoy it, whatever it is. All eyes and all focus was on the movie Oppenheimer. And so this movie is basically about the atomic bomb. And how it was created, how it was developed. And to me, this movie was really pushed and came out and was at the forefront of Hollywood, where millions and millions of people are sitting in front of their televisions watching this yearly event, this, huge Hollywood event. There's oh and every where's everybody's attention going? To the effing atomic bomb, right? And so if anybody is paying attention, Hollywood's a crapshoot. They're this is not by just, oh, they happen to do so great at the Academy Awards and they just happen to win. Fucking Maestro should have won if anybody's seen that. They didn't get any credit. You know, people, you know, these other films, they didn't, you know, whatever. It's all political. But they're pushing an agenda here. And this is what I'm getting to is that the government, people in power, you may not even know. You may not, it may not even click in your brain that they're diverting your attention just in some way, in some sh towards something. So they're doing something over here and they're diverting your attention. So you have no thought in your mind as to what could be going, you know, on over here while they're doing their bullshit right in front of you. Whatever they're presenting to you in a blatant, obvious way is to divert your attention. They've and so they're doing this with the movie Oppenheimer. They did that wonderfully. Now everybody's concerned about the atomic bomb. Fucking, I wasn't even supposed to say that because now it's going to be censored, BOMB. So, but now nobody's thinking about cyber attacks or whatever BS they're planning to do next, whatever, you know, financial plan they have going on to totally dismantle our financial system and move us towards the digital system and so on and so forth. No, they want us to focus on here's the issue, it's still an issue. And I'm not saying, you know, we shouldn't be concerned about it, but what I'm saying is there are other things going on that they use this as a way to divert our attention. That was an aside, but I'm using this as an example because they do the same fucking thing with global climate change. Oh no, it's not the chemtrails, it's not Bill Gates' plan to block the sun with his freaking you can learn all of this. You can read, you can just look this up and like, yes, Bill Gates releases chemicals and horse shit. This is part of his plan into the sky from commercial jets, but also from military craft, just releases all these chemicals in the sky, and then it's like, oh, it's a partly cloudy day. Oh, it's a cloudy day. If you, when I was a kid and I looked up in the sky, those were real clouds. Today, you look up in the sky, almost never, especially if you live in a big city, are those actually real clouds? Okay. So they're diverting our attention. They're, oh, it's a cloudy day. And it's like, we're not, some people might still be asleep to this, but some people aren't. And when it comes to CAFOs, when it comes to cattle, when it comes to beef, they want, this is an easy one. Just blame the beef. Nobody eat that anymore. You know, what a horrific animal. You know, there were, back, if we look over back in overtime throughout history, at one point in time, there were at least 70 plus million buffalo roaming the land in America. And didn't anybody have any issue with this, you know, global climate change? No, actually, we had the opposite effect. We had the opposite thing happen. What happened? Well, there were actually real native grasses that would grow. There were actual perennials that would come up. The soil did not erode as it's doing today. Water would sink into the soil, and there were less flooding events because the soil was aerated. And the roots were deeper in these grasses. And I'm going to talk about this in the episode. And so, more moisture, when it did rain, could penetrate deep down into that soil, and the roots held on to that water. Forget that today. Forget it. And forget it because we've replaced, we've confined our animals. They're no longer roaming over these, you know, the land. In some places, they are regenerative farming, right? But in CAFO environments, we now have about 90 million cattle in the States. But most of those cattle are confined in a CAFO. They're not roaming the land, improving the land, and etc. So, we need to really be more cognizant of this issue. And that they want us to think that cows are the problem. They want us to eat less meat. They don't want us to look at the things that are really contributing to the massive, change in climate. It's not just global warming, right? It's not just, this is a huge issue that has very little to do with cattle. And when it does have to do with cattle, it's the CAFOs that humans have created who house these animals in an unfit environment. That was a very long introduction. Okay, so this is a topic that I'm really passionate about, and it's something that I always get really passionate about, something where we're told lies and lies are jammed down our throat, and we're told to look in this direction, look at over here, look at this, and then what's really going on is being hidden. That shit drives me crazy, and that's really why I do this podcast, is for whoever happens to come across this podcast and listen to it. I just hope that it helps to open people's eyes in a new way as to what's really going on, and maybe be an impetus for people to think outside the box, or question what's going on and come to their own conclusions, based on what I share here and what they learn in their own firsthand experience. So throughout this episode, I'm going to discuss the impact that cattle have on the environment. I'm going to discuss the impact that monocrop farming, quote unquote farming, if we can actually call this farming. We can't. No, this should not be called farming. Anyway, the impact that monocrop industry has on the environment. I'm going to talk in more detail about when humans who raise cattle contribute to increased carbon emissions, and when the cattle actually sequester carbon and decrease carbon emissions. I'm going to talk about how you can tell if your beef that you're buying at your grocery store, at Jeff Bezos, wherever you go, is really grass-fed. Because here they go again. Oh, everybody wants grass-fed. They're catching on, and then they're now taking shortcuts. I want you to know about those shortcuts. I'm going to talk about what those are so you can bring more awareness to, hey, is this really grass-fed? And how do I tell? So I think that's a really, really important discussion to have. So I'm going to teach you that here today also. Now, currently, my wife and I own two cows. I say currently because I just have this sense that our herd is going to grow. But we have two Jersey cows. One is currently in milk. The other one, Ruth Jones, who, if you are on my newsletter or if you follow me on Instagram at sunlight underscore RX, you have seen on my story and page, Ruth Jones and her journey through life. And my wife writes an amazing blog over at our farm site, ohocanejo.com, and she talks a lot about our cows, and she tells stories about our farm experience with the cows and with our entire farm also. But we have two cows. And not only have I been able to really witness and observe this topic firsthand as to, cows, their methane production, which is methane, is a type of the gut or bacteria, the rumen bacteria belch up. And it's blamed for global warming, which is absolutely insane. But anyway, I've been able to study this firsthand by having cows from our very small herd that is going to grow. But I wanted to share about, or excuse me, I wanted to learn about this topic more deeply. Like, okay, I have these two creatures who are blamed for carbon emissions. And so I really wanted to learn from them. But also, I started to actually deep dive into what's really going on, the history, when and how cows contribute to increased carbon emissions. And what I can say is that the quote unquote science around cows and global warming are completely one-sided. It's lopsided, as almost always, and dismisses the other side of the coin, which I'll be discussing today. So everybody's like, oh, look at the science. It's like, wake up and smell the fucking coffee. The science is flawed and is produced by these idiots who are trying to get you to look in the other direction and not, have any intelligence or intuition or awareness about what's really going on. Okay. And being a cow owner, owning cattle myself, has also made me learn about, okay, how can I help contribute to a better climate and environment with our farm animals, including cattle, versus contribute to its demise and fall? And I'm going to be sharing about this throughout the episode as well. So before I dive into how cattle can actually be a huge asset to the planet, I want to mention that I'm currently accepting new clients in my homeopathic and ancestral diet practice. And I invite you to book a session if you're ready to start reversing root causes, including genetic predispositions that are driving your health struggles. You can book your session over at my site, heatherscheppard.com. Go to the homeopathy tab and you can go to book a session, or you can book your ancestral diet session with me, heatherscheppard.com, and go to the ancestral diet plans tab. A little look at what's in store later this month, actually probably right around the beginning of April, I'm going to be releasing an online version of my practitioner training program, which teaches you how to be a classically trained homeopath. There will be several classes available, including an intro to homeopathy, as well as how to treat anxiety and panic disorders, how to treat gut health disorders, how to treat PTSD and trauma, and others using homeopathic medicine. So if that's something you've been interested in, if you haven't been able to attend my live in-person practitioner training teachings, stay tuned for the release of these mini courses here on the podcast or over on my Instagram page at sunlight_rx, because that will be coming your way very, very soon. All right, everyone, let's continue with this very heated topic. It's something, of course, that, as you can tell, and I've mentioned that I'm very passionate about, but I want to just put out there right away. First of all, anyone who says with a complete yes that cows contribute to global climate, whatever, and they are the demise of our planet, right? Red flag. Or anyone who says with a complete nope that they don't contribute at all, both of these stances are inaccurate. Okay. So now, cows can contribute to increased carbon emissions, sure, but they can also totally reverse this process and actually help to reduce carbon emissions. This is what we're not being told. Oh, they're actually part of the solution. Imagine that, right? That's what we're not being told. So now, I want to say that I love cows. I love beef. Ribeyes are my favorite food group, and brisket burgers, they don't fall too far behind, honestly. And if you're someone who loves beef, it's really important to understand how that cow was raised. And we have to go beyond, was this cow raised on grass? Was this cow fed an organic diet? Okay, we need to go beyond that. We need to ask questions like, was this cow ever in a CAFO? Did they spend any of their life in a CAFO environment? Now, just to be clear, cows are not the only animals raised in CAFOs, a confined living environment. And this type of environment increases risk of disease, increases illness in the animal, especially respiratory infection. It's highly unsanitary conditions where the animals lay, sleep, and stand in their feces, their urine, and that of their peers, and cows, pigs, chicken, sheep. Okay. These are some of the main animals raised in a CAFO environment. Of course, or maybe you don't know yet, whatever, that these animals do not have to be raised in this way. They don't have to be raised like that. And not everyone is raising animals in this way, right? So you can choose to get your meat from a regenerative farmer. I'm starting off here by, because I really want you to understand this, teaching you the difference between what, how to tell is grass-fed good? Is the beef that you're eating really grass-fed, even though the label says that? Because this whole topic ties in together with CAFOs, grass-fed or not, global climate, whatever, you know. And so I'm going to kind of be connecting the dots between all of these things here. But the animals don't have to be raised in a CAFO environment, and nor are all of the animals raised in this type of environment today. You can choose to get your meat from a regenerative farmer. Heather, it costs more. Yep, but guess what? You know, at this time, it costs more and it's totally effed up. You know, the system's backwards. We know that. You know, that's where we're at. But you're supporting, you're not just buying amazing beef for your health and your family's health and your well-being. You're supporting the planet. You're supporting somebody who's actually doing something good for the world, trying to make a difference. Okay. So a farm that allows their animals to graze outside, that allows their animals to be in sunlight and have lots of space and a healthy diet, this is where you want to get your beef from. Okay. So if you love beef just as much as I do, it's important to make sure that the beef you're buying doesn't come from a CAFO. And honestly, this is a little bit harder to navigate than we might, than you might think. Okay. We have to go beyond labels here because the labels now are not so accurate. Okay. So if you're thinking, oh, well, this is an easy one, just buy grass-fed, grass-finished beef at the grocery store, boom, I'm doing my part. I get it. Yeah, that's used to be doing our part. And I wish it were that simple present day. But unfortunately, the industry has caught on to the fact that, hey, people care about what they eat and they want the real ancestral, humane, and healthy form of this product, which is animals raised humanely on grass outside with lots of space to roam, not in a CAFO. But here's the deal. People can be assholes and self-centered, egotistical, and totally financially driven, okay? Especially people who sell things, especially people who sell things on a large scale to grocery stores. And unfortunately, now not all of them are going to be this way, right? But we have to keep this in mind. Even if you shop at the co-op, even if you get something grass-fed at Jeff Bezos, okay? Unfortunately, at this point in time, what a label says isn't always an accurate reflection of what is really going on, of how that product was really produced or made. So, for example, today, if your meat says grass-fed, excuse me, all this means is that the animal was fed grass at some point in their lives, meaning maybe at 6 months they ate grass, and maybe at 12 months they then went to a CAFO to get fattened up on grains before slaughter. Okay. Now, just stay with me. I'm going to help you figure this out. We're all in it together, okay? Grass-fed labels do not guarantee that the animal wasn't fed grains or confined in a CAFO. And I know right about now, you might be thinking, what in the actual F? You know, I can't trust any of these people. Believe me when I say, I know it's frustrating. But, you know, let's take this as a silver lining, Nancy. Let's turn this into an empowering win for us to make even better food choices. And I know that it can seem like you're always trying to figure out the most optimal food, fuel to put into your body, into your child's body. And instead of fighting this, instead of saying, throwing in the towel, instead of saying, fuck it, this is too hard, this is too much work, listen, this is what they want you to do. This is what the system wants you to do. This is what they want. They want for all of this to get too overwhelming, too hard, too difficult to source good food. They want you to just go back to Prime, fill up your cart, forget what's in there. It says organic, right? They want you to just do that. Okay? That's the easy way. But I'm encouraging you, don't throw in the towel. Don't start eating the crap they offer because it's easy. Because you don't have to think about it, because it's readily available to all of us. It's much easier to eat crap than to eat a clean diet. Totally easier. So much easier. They designed it this way. They don't want you to win. I mean, don't I want you to win. They don't want you to win. They never have your best interest in mind. They want you under their thumb, and they want you eating the horrific horror show of the food they've created. That's what they want. That's what they aim for. It's easy. They're making it easy for you. Postmate this, Instacart it, put it in your cart, send it to they want you to do this. Okay. The majority of beef today sold in grocery stores, whether that label says grass-fed, organic, no antibiotics ever administered, the majority of beef today sold in grocery stores have been raised or spent some time of their lives in a CAFO, and they do not tell you this on the label. So, when it comes to CAFOs, to be clear, these are confined living environments where the animals are shoved into a very small space, and there are thousands upon thousands of these animals living on top of one another. So, what do you think happens to all the urine, to all the cow pies, to the air these animals are breathing? It's an absolute toxic shit show. Okay? Just keep this in mind. We're continuing on the grass-fed thing, but just keep all of this, store it, keep this in mind. So, grass-finished. Okay? This is a catchphrase. It's also on many labels today. This is a phrase that you look for if you want to make sure the beef you're eating spent the end of its life on grass versus grain. Okay? Now, while grass-finished once meant that the animal spent its entire life grazing on pasture, including the end of its life, this too is unfortunately no longer the case. The animal could have been sent to a CAFO early in its life in the last few weeks or month or whatever time frame the CAFO operation came up with. Spent its last days either grazing on grass, we hope, or fed grass pellets while they were confined, excuse me. Okay? So they can say this on the label. This is now classified as grass finished. Are you effing kidding me? Like, stop. Like, we it's insanity. It is, okay? All right, stay with me. We're getting there, okay? There are ways around these things. Now, if the meat label says 100% pasture raised, at this time, this means that the animal was never in a CAFO. The downfall is it could have been fed corn or soy while roaming pasture. If you're at a grocery store and it says 100% pasture raised, that is your best bet. There's other best bets, but that's your best bet when you're at a grocery store. So this is why I cannot emphasize and encourage you all enough to get to know your farmers and to stop buying meat from grocery stores or buy less meat at grocery stores and get it from farmers that you know, farms that you've visited, farms that you've researched online. and that you know do a good job, and you've sent an email to them to inquire, or you've talked to them on the phone. This is now the gold standard. The gold standard is, hey, have a conversation with someone in person, or like, you know, at least send them an email, but actually talk to the person. Okay. There's this disconnect between our food is a huge disconnect. You know, when I met my wife, she didn't even know that she didn't know about, you know, you plant a seed and things grow. She grew up in Phoenix. There's no growing things. You don't, this is a massive desert. It's a total shithole. Okay. Now, so what I'm saying is get to know your farmers, do your research, go to your farmer's market. Oh, they don't have what you want. They don't have what you need. You need a more affordable price. Look online. There are people who actually raise their meat and animals in a really good way who have pretty affordable shipping options. Okay. You know, there are options out there. This is now the gold standard. The gold standard is somebody in your town or close to you has meat and raises it in a good way, which you usually can find. This is usually something that's available. Then second best is look online for something that, you know, you don't have near you. This is now the gold standard. The statistics reflected in the science regarding cattle and global warming, carbon emissions come from where? Where do these statistics come from? Ooh, cows do this much methane and this much carbon emissions and blah, blah, blah. Where are these studies? Where does the science get this information? From cattle raised in CAFOs. They're not out taking the statistics of a herd raised in a regenerative way using pasture rotation practices. Why? Because the science wouldn't come up with the conclusion that they want you to hear. Okay. This is like when all the vegan documentaries came out showing how bad animals were to eat and how their living conditions were so inhumane and horrific because they were in CAFOs. Well, no kidding. Like, of course, that's horrendous. It's not the animal that's the problem. It's the human. It's the humans raising the animals in that way. Right. Okay. So we have to think there's actually other choices. There's an alternative. What about raising animals in their natural environment? That's the alternative. Okay. In the mitochondrial world, it's commonly, there's this really common, you know, saying that you cannot heal in the environment that fuels sickness. Well, guess what? Neither can animals. And when you eat animals raised in this environment, it will have consequences on your health, on the environment, on the food system, on food availability, period. So we have to understand that cattle are not the bad guys or ladies or whatever, but how those cattle are fed, how those cattle are managed, and the living environment they're thrown into when entering a CAFO. This is the problem. This is the problem with regard to carbon emissions, with regard to health and well-being of the animal, with regard to your health and well-being. The people working in these environments have to be incredibly sick. Absolutely, totally sick. Short lifespan. Okay. So cattle raised in a way that includes pasture rotation has actually been shown to have a net negative carbon impact, meaning they improve the land and the environment and the air you breathe, the air they breathe. Today, so much of our land is either filled with acres upon acres of monocrops, corn, soy, rapeseed, nut trees, cotton, fruit trees, grains, including wheat. And there are no animals on this land. There's no crop rotation, not really. I mean, maybe they'll go like, you know, when there is crop rotation, they don't put the animals on that, you know, where they grew 500 acres of corn, 200 acres of corn. They don't put the cows there to then improve the land. Nope, they don't do that. But they do use heaps of pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, Roundup Ready, water. They need heaps of water because the soil is so compact that it doesn't penetrate into the soil because it's become a desert. Okay. And the cost of this, that's what we need to be looking at. What is the cost of this? Oh, we feed so many people with monocrops. Absolute BS. That's another diversion of our attention. That's another podcast for another day. But it's been proven that cows raised in a regenerative way, utilizing pasture rotation practices, raised on grass, native grasses, perennials, has a carbon imprint 111% lower than CAFO beef. And sequesters nearly twice the amount of carbon than that released in the production of soy. Okay, so that is a very interesting insight and a different story that we're than we're being told. When cows are allowed to graze on pasture, they walk the soil, which then aerates the soil. think about a small cow would be, 800 pounds and up to 12, 1400 pounds. And they have four hooves. This amount of weight penetrating into the soil aerates the soil, breaks up the soil, turns any of the plants that were there into mulch, helps creating this compost, enriching the soil. Okay, so when cows are allowed to graze on pasture, they walk the soil, which aerates the soil and does many other things, versus monocropping, which depletes the soil, poisons the soil, and creates a desert, eroding the topsoil, which means any nutrients that were in the soil are removed. The wind, the rains that flood because they can't penetrate into the soil. What happens? All that topsoil is blown away, washed away, removed. The soils each year, this soil is more deficient, more deficient, more deficient, more deficient with every passing year. Every passing year, the soil should be more nutrient dense, more rich, richer, greener, more abundant. It's not the story we get with monocrops. That's not the situation we're creating. Okay. When cows are allowed to graze on pasture, they drop their dung along the dirt. And this refertilizes the soil without the need to use any fossil fuels to cart in synthetic fertilizers, which monocrop farmers do. They use synthetic fertilizers in heaps. Why? Because they've totally depleted the nutrients in their soil. So now they have to add, or they choose to add, synthetic fertilizers to their soil, which cost heaps, have to be trucked in. The carbon emissions used to just haul in synthetic fertilizers is astounding, let alone how those synthetic fertilizers are produced. Again, this isn't the story we're being told. It's the cows. It's the cow burps. It's really, really what's the issue? Cows that are allowed to graze on pasture require less medical intervention. Their living environment is clean, healthy, their diet's natural, there's less need for treatment with antibiotics for infection. And if we raise cattle in this way, there would be absolutely no need to inoculate them. Okay, this is a topic that I'm also very passionate about that I'll be talking more about in the future. Because at this point in my life, I am searching for animals raised in a completely natural way to raise myself, to eat. And this includes animals who have not been jabbed. And let me tell you, is that search, that's not an easy search. Hi, thanks for doing what you do. Are your cattle vaxxed? A lot of farmers state on their site or in their emails that they do not inoculate with any mRNA jabs. Which, C19 has, and the pandemic has taught us, like, okay, has opened our eyes to the detriment of these. But that's not where we draw the line. There is no such thing as a good jab. Doesn't exist. No such thing. There's no such thing. It's not just the mRNAs that need to be avoided. It's all of them. It's all of them in humans and animals. And it's not a hard thing to choose not to do. And it doesn't weaken your herd. It strengthens them. It strengthens their genetics. And more on that topic in the very near future, because it's a topic I'm very, very passionate about. None of our animals have been jabbed, nor will they ever will be. And we've had to go to great measures to find this, but I can't tell you how much it's worth it. When somebody bites into one of our pork chops or tastes our butter and they're like, "What the heck?" I'm like, "Exactly. It's the diet, and it's also what has been put into these animals' bodies. That's a reflection of that." Cows raised in CAFOs are fed a diet rich in grains and animal byproducts, and they're fed a lot of all the monocrops. They're like ground up into cakes and grains and nonsense. And this is what the animals are fed at the CAFOs. It's a whole system. It's a whole cult. Okay. When cows are fed an unnatural diet, they're more prone to digestive distress and infection. When they're crammed into tiny living spaces, they get sores on their legs more easily. Then what do we do? Oh, they literally just give all of their cows antibiotics because they know the environment that their animals are living in breeds illness and disease. And so they're like, we're not going to keep an eye on thousands of these animals. Just give all of them antibiotics. Like, let's keep this simple, guys, you know? And that's what they do. It's totally a fuck show, okay? So by feeding them an unnatural diet, they're more prone to digestive distress, digestive infection. When they're crammed into tiny living spaces, they get more sores, they get more infections, they get respiratory infections just simply from the horrific polluted air. Have you ever driven by a CAFO? Like, if you have driven by one, you will know. It's something you will never ever forget. And for the love of sweet baby Jesus, you smell the manure. You smell the urine for literally miles and miles. You cannot take a deep breath. You're driving past in your car, your eyes burn, your nose burns. You have to turn off your heat and your air conditioning when you drive through because the stench comes through in the vents, and you're literally just you cannot breathe. You cannot see because your eyes are just weeping from the scent, from the ammonia, from the toxins. You cannot run away or drive away from this smell fast enough. And the piles of shit and urine created at a CAFO that leach into the air and run into the water systems. This is a huge problem. But is it the cow's fault? No, it's the idiot humans who are raising the animals this way. Oh, I got $1,000 for this calf today. I will slay, right? It's like, are you kidding me? That's the thing. Because farmers and their cows, they calf. They have calves, right? And then what do you do with them? The government has thought of an incredibly easy solution and will pay you as part of that solution. So when all of your cows birth and you have all these calves, you take them to an auction and there they go off to the CAFO and you have 30 grand in your pocket, right? That's the trade-off. They make it seem like you win. They're paying you. If you are in this system, you are part of the problem. If you have so many cows that you have to send your calves to a CAFO, your herd is too big and also unmanageable, and there are other solutions. There are other solutions than sending your calves to a CAFO. Let's get a little creative. Yeah, it's easy. You can have thousands of dollars in your pocket by just taking all your calves to a CAFO auction. No problem. And that's what most people do. It's easy. They get money in their pocket. And this is what keeps the system going. And this is the problem. This is the problem. Okay. So, animals raised in CAFOs stink. Animals raised on pasture smell of nothing. You drive by and you smell the fresh air and your window's open. And you're like, oh, look at the cows grazing. Isn't that nice, honey? And it is, because that's how they're supposed to be raised. If you smell feces, ammonia, then the humans, the animals aren't the problem. The humans are. They're not giving the animal enough space, and they're not composting the manure in. They could even be throwing it in a manure lagoon. They literally create these massive, huge ponds and just fucking throw all their feces and urine in it. Like, that's a good idea. Like, oh, wow, we're really solving the problem. It's like, the porch is dirty. We'll just sweep it under the rug. It's like, this is what they're doing, and this is the problem. We utilize every drop of manure from our animals, okay? Our chickens, our pigs, our cows. It's either left to fertilize the land, distributed throughout. During the winter months, especially when grazing isn't possible, we create compost piles and spread it on the land come spring, and we give it to our neighbors. We literally had one of our neighbors walk up with her dog the other day. She's like, hey, can I muck your stove? This lady, she's so sweet. She's like, she's got to be in her 80s. She's like, I came because I want to muck your stall so I can really work for some manure for my garden. We're like, I'm not gonna say her name. We're like, Sally. Just gonna call her Sally. We're just gonna give you the manure, okay? You don't have to muck our stalls. Has never let an 80-year-old woman muck our stalls, but the thing is, people, we distribute the compost to our neighbors who come in droves to get free shit. Why? Because this is 100% organic natural fertilizer that adds nutrients to the soil, allowing your veggies to grow, your grass to grow, your flowers to grow, and it gives the soil and plants strength, stamina, vitality, nutrients. So when cows are allowed to graze on pasture, and then we rotate the pasture, something very interesting happens that I mentioned at the beginning of this episode. The root system of the soil and grasses, excuse me, improves immensely. If we stop the monocropping BS and put cattle out on those fields in a few years, we'd start restoring the health and vitality that has been completely destroyed by monocrop practices. This is a real part of the issue, the monocropping. The topsoil eroded desert that these practices have created would become an oasis. Monocropping erodes topsoil, destroys the root system of the soil and the plants and the native grasses that were once there. And this increases the propensity to flooding because the soil is so compact for monocropping. Cropping. I should say cropping because it really is a crapshoot. The soil is so compact that it cannot take in water even when it rains. So what do we have? More floods. We have more floods because the water cannot penetrate into the soil. You put a cow out on pasture and it aerates the soil and allows native grasses and perennials to return, which allows the roots of these plants to deepen. The opposite of this occurs with monocropping. As this root system develops below the earth, which with some grasses can expand to over 10 feet, the roots go over 10 feet below the earth. Massive root networks develop. And the roots, the grasses, the perennials, it keep these roots keep those things intact, preventing erosion. And this allows more water to penetrate into the soil. Deeper root systems equal more nutrients in the plants and grasses, and this equals less drought. Because even environments where rain is, let's say, it's just not abundant, the water is able to penetrate deep into the soil, and the soil and the roots are able to hold more water for longer periods of time because the root system is so deep, it holds onto that water. So even if there's a month in the summer where it's like, oh my gosh, there's one day of rain or no days of rain, those grasses, those plants stay nourished and hydrated because the roots hold the water, the deep root system. Monocropping has destroyed this whole thing. Okay, when we allow cows to graze on grass with plenty of space, this is what happens. This meaning the exact opposite of carbon emissions. Okay, and instead, we now have a net negative carbon imprint just from doing this. Cows are not the problem, they're part of the solution. So the next time somebody shames you for eating beef, for grilling a ribeye, for buying a half of a steer, telling you that you're contributing to the global climate issue, well, you can share any of this with them, and you can also ask them if, hey, do you eat any monocrop foods? Guaranteed. Most people do. Most people don't even know it. They're like, what? What's a monocrop? Right? Or do they use natural gas in their home? Woo! You want to talk about carbon emissions? That's another. Oh, everybody has natural gas. We're just going to drill right down here and get it up for you. Right? The carbon emissions there, insane. Or if they drive an electric car, that'll really get them going. Or if they have a cell phone, which would not be possible. Cell phones would not be possible unless slave labor practices, to mine minerals. That's how you get your cell phone. That's how phones are made. All of those contribute to the global climate issue. Monocropping requires the use of synthetic fertilizers, and synthetic fertilizers, just like your cell phone, wouldn't be possible without mining for minerals and drilling for natural gas. So the process involved in producing these things and drilling for natural gas place synthetic fertilizers pretty high in the top of the list for contribution to carbon emissions. So if we really want to take a good look at this problem, which I would encourage you to do, because this agenda is being jammed down our throats even more today than ever. The carbon emissions created by CAFOs and animals in CAFOs are fed monocrops that produce shit tons of carbon emissions. This is a huge issue. Okay. So can we blame the cow? No. No, we cannot blame the cow. When there's a problem, it's never because of nature. It's always because of humans trying to one-up nature. It's always, always, always. Blaming cattle for our issues with global climate warming change, whatever, and carbon emissions is it's literally like a murder mystery that frames the innocent person. Not only is it inaccurate to say that cattle are the problem, it's misleading and dangerous because these inaccuracies. This is what puts poison into the minds of the people, and round we go. Here we go, never getting to the root of the issue. Look over here, dance, monkey, dance. Don't really look at what's going on, right? A return to small family farms and/or buying your food from these farms is one of the solutions to this issue. Unfortunately, small family farms are disappearing overnight. Over 1,000 family farms per month are discontinuing their farming practices. It's easier to go get a job. It's easier to go out in the world. It's easier to do XYZ. There's not money in farming. And on the story goes. Start buying food from your small farmers. Keep them alive. And this is a huge part of the problem that you can solve by either starting your dream to have a small farm. Literally, if you just get 5 ducks, if you just get 6 chickens, if you start some raised beds and use the manure from your neighbor's cow or pigs or whatever, this is part of the solution. Start your dream farm, even if it's small, or and or start purchasing more of your food and meat from small farms who never send their animals to a CAFO. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. To learn more about my approach to health, to see all of my creations in the kitchen and all of my Sunlight RX tips, you can follow me on the gram at sunlight_RX and subscribe to this podcast to access weekly episodes.